following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 6 a.m. August 1st, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show. Hello, thanks for listening to K-Voice. That's the letter K, voice. All right, let's get some business out of the way, and then I'm excited to tell you about my weekend. First off, healthcare, woo! I'm still super pleased about our recent win. So what's next? If you live in the state with a Republican senator, be sure you call your friendly Republican who voted to strip healthcare from millions in order to give tax breaks for the undeserving rich and let them know that you will dedicate your life and money to unseating them. And to the coward that is Dean Heller of Nevada, the lone GOP senator up for re-election in a state that Hillary won, Jackie Rosen is a Democrat running for Heller's seat next year, and if there is a campaign worth donating to, this might be the one you choose. In fact, do it now, so it's clear that it is a response to his healthcare vote. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona is another one. Regardless of the fact that Arizona's approval of the repeal was only at 6%, he once again decided to not do his job as a representative of the constituents who voted him in and cast votes for the motion to proceed and for all three GOP plans. Flake is not popular back home. According to a Morning Consult poll released in July, just 30% of registered Arizona voters approve of Jeff Flake, and several Democratic challengers have emerged as possible candidates to run against him, including Representative Kristen Sinema and Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton. Now, we also need to call up and thank our Democrats for standing firm. Positive reinforcement is as important as negative to ensure our politicians continue to do the right thing. That includes the Democratic champions like Elizabeth Warren, who constantly reminded us to persist in this fight, and Tammy Baldwin, who has called out the GOP's reckless plan every step of the way, and Mazie Hirono, who returned from treatment from stage 4 kidney cancer to cast her vote. And all three of these are up for re-election next fall. Flippable.org is our resource to see what states will be flippable, and not only just in 2018, but before then, and importantly, in the much-overlooked smaller state races. Because state politics are a foundation of national politics, right now, they are focusing on Virginia. Virginia's unfair voting laws make Democrat votes count for less.
Oh no!
Even in national elections. Because we are all interconnected, Virginia's semi-automatic weapons and pollutants cross state borders. Because Virginia is the first flippable state, all 100 states in the Virginia House of Delegates will be up for election this November. Guys, we can turn the red tide in America by flipping Virginia blue. So check them out. Donate, volunteer, or at least help spread the word about flippable upcoming races. If we do nothing else, we must flip local elections. So this week in Congress, the House is on their ridiculously long recess until September 5th. The Senate, however, is in action, for better or worse. Monday and Tuesday, they only have on the schedule working through the process of the nomination of Kevin Newsom to be U.S. Circuit Court judge. And the rest of the week is to be determined. So like I like to do here, let's talk about our new nominee. The vacancy that Newsom would fill has been open since 2013. It's in the 11th Circuit. After years of consultation with Alabama Senator Jefferson Bugaz Sessions and Richard Shelby, President Obama nominated a district court judge named Abdul Kellen to the seat. No African American from Alabama has ever served on the 11th Circuit or its predecessor's court, the 5th Circuit, which used to include Alabama. In fact, Kellen is only the third African-American in history to serve as federal judge on any level in Alabama. And though Senators Shelby and Sessions supported Kellen's district court nomination, they used their blue slips to block Kellen from even having a hearing.
You suck!
So instead of having a Judge Kellen, we now have a Kevin Newsom. People for the American Way, which is a progressive advocacy organization founded to fight right-wing extremism and defend constitutional values under attack, wrote a letter to our Democratic senators, asking them that they not be so quick to confirm this man. So who is this man? He is a longtime member of Ted Cruz's favorite, the Federalist Society. The Federalist Society was founded in 1982 by a group of students at Yale, Harvard, and the University of Law of Chicago law schools as an attempt to challenge what they considered to be the neglect of conservative and libertarian ideas in the American legal system. Worse, they are originalist. They think that the Constitution should be taken as originally written. They want it unchanged, meaning that it shouldn't adapt to contemporary times. You know, like, go back to the days when black people were considered three-fifths a person. Using that standard, some judges have challenged previous court rulings allowing broad federal control over states on regulatory and civil rights issues. The Federalist Society members also received several nominations to the appellate judgeships. Reagan nominated two of the Society's original faculty advisors, Robert Bork and Antonin Scalia, to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit and the Supreme Court. Bush nominated Clarence Thomas to both courts. After that, about half of W's appointments to the courts of appeals went to society members, including Trump frontrunners Hardiman, Pryor, and Gorsuch. Bush also appointed John Roberts and Samuel Alito, both with significant ties to the society, to the Supreme Court. So you are getting the kind of person that belongs to this club. During last year's campaign, Donald Trump offered an unprecedented guarantee that his potential Supreme Court nominations would come from the Federalist wing of the party and seem to be where he's getting his lower court picks. My, how their power has grown. So Newsom was the former Attorney General of Alabama, currently a law firm partner who represents large corporate interest in civil litigation.
Order in the court. Be seated.
He also represented Alabama in an amicus brief in Caperton v. Macy Coal Company. It was an important case recognizing the corrupting impact of money in politics, including independent expenditures. Newsom argued that the litigant's constitutional rights were not violated, even when the judge hearing the case owed his position to the party's enormous, disproportionate, and unprecedented campaign spending on his behalf. Rather than focusing on an individual's constitutional rights to a fair and unbiased judiciary, Newsom focused on the vital principles of federalism. As if states would be the truly injured party if the court found a constitutional violation. In 2004, he argued in an article that if people were retaliated against for exercising their Title IX rights, then they could not sue. Title IX, you'll remember, states that no person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied benefits of, or be subjugated to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. Newsom also is virulently against what is called substantive due process, which the Supreme Court has recognized as protecting the right of women to choose an abortion and the right of same-sex couples to marry. In his 2000 article, he goes so far as to claim that Roe v. Wade had its genesis in Dred Scott. Dred Scott was the case brought by a slave, Dred Scott, who lived with his owner in a free state before returning to the slave state of Missouri. Scott argued that his time spent in these locations entitled him to emancipation. The court found, quote, "No black, free or slave, could claim U.S. citizenship, and therefore were unable to petition the court for their freedom." This Dred Scott decision incensed abolitionists and heightened the North-South tensions, which would erupt in war just 3 years later. Right. The right for a woman to have control over her body came from denying slaves their freedom? How does that track? There's far more about this dude, but I figure that's enough.
Know thy enemy, right?
This ties us into our next big story, because it is a happy story. But it also shows you the kind of damage that could be done by a judge with a record of hostility to fundamental constitutional rights, who would shut out more than half of the population from full protections of the United States Constitution, with abortion rights and marriage equality among the rights at risk.
It's good to be aware of the players with power in our country.
And more so, that elections matter. Pro-choice activist, we have something to celebrate. And we have our friends, the courts, to thank for it. It was in the most unlikely of places. Arkansas and Alabama. In Arkansas, A federal judge issued a preliminary injunction on 4 cruel and unusual laws. 3 of them would have gone into effect on Tuesday. In a case filed by the American Civil Liberties Union and the Center for Reproductive Rights on behalf of a Little Rock abortion provider, Dr. Frederick Hopkins. The draconian laws ban a common second trimester abortion procedure known as dilation and evacuation. They impose restrictions regarding the fetal remains that could allow the woman's sexual partner or even her rapist to effectively block her abortion. They ramp up requirements about reporting a minor's abortion to law enforcement, and they require providers to obtain records of a woman's entire history of pregnancy. And then, on the same day, the ACLU, woohoo, the ACLU, the ACLU won a case in Alabama after the U.S. magistrate, Judge Susan Russ Walker, blocked a 2014 parental consent law that required a state to appoint a lawyer to represent any fetus being carried by a minor in cases where a minor sought a judicial bypass to obtain an abortion. The law also allowed a minor's parents or legal guardian to appeal the bypass. This law would likely delay the procedure until the minor could no longer access the abortion. And by no accident.
You suck.
The ACLU, our friend the ACLU,
donate if you can.
Cheaper than dinner and a drink. Hell, just dinner these days. The ACLU Reproductive Freedom Project senior staff attorney Andrew Beck, in a press release, said, quote, "By undermining their confidentiality, this law put teenagers participating in the judicial bypass process in real danger. It's great when teens can turn to their parents if they have an unintended pregnancy. But that ideal is not always the reality. The law exposed teens to the risk of abuse or harm. When a young woman decides to end her pregnancy, she should be able to do it with compassion and respect, without cruel barriers that shame her and put her in harm's way." Unquote. So yay! It sucks that we have to fight for reason,
compassion,
for a better world, and for the lack of a better word, for freedom. But we do. Freedom. One of the right's favorite cheer words. Freedom! I saw two dudes wearing shirts this Saturday with big ol' flag-painted eagles on them. They were red shirts, of course. And written in big print all the way down the front said, "I'm sorry, but I can't hear you over the sound of my freedom." You can see a picture on my Facebook page of K-Voice and Resistance of a dude in that shirt stepping back in shock as this fabulous green-haired guy in spandex with silver stars in choice places stands in high-heeled platforms and impressively holds his own foot over his head in a perfect split. It is a picture that tells a story for sure. That was at Politicon, which I'll tell you more about later. Anyways, the right and the far right, politicians and voters alike, always like to talk about freedom and patriotism, as though they are the only believers. Patriotism. Half of you are stoked that Russia interfered and think that it's fine if Russia has an influence on our politics. Patriotism?
And freedom.
Come on. They yell at the left, saying we're in favor of oppression and enslavement. And they spout platitudes about free speech so that they can be openly racist.
And rude.
No, I'm sorry. What's the term?
Politically correct.
But if we offend them, they cry foul. They silence comedians, fight to shut down shows, pile on any ethnic person or woman, saying that they should just shut up.
Oppression.
They can yell and scream about someone else's religion, but you're not allowed to dare say a word about Christianity. They spout freedom of religion, but what they really mean is freedom of the Christian religion.
Christianity.
Muslims don't belong here.
Only Christianity belongs.
No, it is required to be in government or public spaces.
People must be required to say Merry Christmas, despite the fact that they are not Christians.
Freedom.
Freedom.
They want to restrict, even outlaw, homosexuality.
Transgendered, transsexual, or bisexual people.
They cry freedom,
and in the same breath tell a woman that she should stay at home and take care of the family.
Christianity.
Freedom.
Then support over-incarceration and police violence against Black people, Hispanics,
and anyone else who lacks white privilege.
They cry freedom for business. They work to strip them of regulations, yet ignore that in the same breath they are denying people the freedom to live healthy, happy, and secure.
Their freedom to drink water that has not poisoned, to breathe air that has not been clogged with smoke, methane, or toxins.
The freedom of not being cheated out of their life savings and to know what's in their food and more.
If they really believed in freedom and deregulation,
they would make drugs and prostitution legal.
But instead, they ramp up the war on drugs and punish the prostitute.
Oppression.
They want to take away our health
healthcare while denying us the freedom to have access to insurance and care. The freedom to live.
Christian.
They cry freedom and then fight tooth and nail to deny a woman control and freedom of her own body. There is nothing but hypocrisy here, which sadly is nothing new.
Political convention that's open to the public, but bring along a sense of humor.
Okay. I was at Politicon on Saturday. It was a blast. I wish I could have been there on Sunday too, but my friend took me to see Book of Mormon, which was just as amazing as everyone said it was. So I also recommend that. Politicon is the Comic-Con of politics. It's the Coachella of politics. If you are a politics nerd like me, you have to check it out for next year if you can get to LA. They bring people from all sides of the aisle to debate, hold panels, put up booths and exhibits. There were comedians from The Daily Show, Larry Wilmer, Samantha Bee, the liberal redneck was there, and so many more. CNN brought several reporters, including Jake Tapper. MSNBC dominated with Casey Hunt, Ari Melber, Steve Karnecki, and I met the adorable Jacob Soboroff. Most importantly, I met the smartest person in media, Joy Ann Reed of AM Joy. And I totally lost my cool about it too, guys. The people from the left, from like the Young Turks and the Pod Save America guys, and Ted Lieu and Amy Klobuchar, plus so many more. And then from the far right, there was Ann Coulter and her mini-me, Tomi Lahren, who, by the way, on Sunday, in complaining about Obamacare, was asked what insurance she was on. And it turns out, she is still on her parents' insurance thanks to Obamacare.
Of course she is.
Those two women are just despicable. I refuse to see them. There were many Never Trump Republicans. There was Michael Steele, David Frum, Anna Navarro, who's awesome. Remember her?
This dude, this disgusting dude, is the president of the United States.
And you know what? It occurred to me on Saturday that our, quote, impossibly divided nation that is further apart than ever, that is supposed to be too polarized to cooperate, may be a read on things that neglects another phenomenon that is recurring. Normal out of office, never Trump Republicans and liberals now have a common enemy. And there is, maybe, a coming together of belief under maybe disenfranchisement of a dysfunctional Washington, and more so, a rejection of the Trump and the Tea Party wings of the Republican Party. And of course, Trump. When I'm agreeing with the conservative panelists on TV who are not in the back for Trump 90% of the time, it means there has been a major cosmic shift. The media is talking about a new conservative party forming altogether, the Trump wing, who seek to unseat and destroy normal GOPers. So I believe even more Republicans will unite with us. Remember, only 26% of the electorate actually voted for Trump. 26%! Maybe the sane Americans actually are putting our differences aside and bonding over shared hatred. Maybe. Just maybe. Anyway, Roger Stone was there. And if you're not very familiar with who Roger Stone is, watch Get Me Roger Stone on Netflix. Roger Stone.
Even if Donald Trump loses, I still win because the Stone brand has been front and center and my brand of politics have finally come into their own. CNN, MSNBC, they're now the fringe. Alt-right communications, we are the mainstream.
Every Republican president we have had since Nixon has had him involved with his campaign. Basically, it is totally possible that without Roger Stone, we wouldn't have some of those presidents. And very likely that without this misanthrope, we wouldn't have Donald Trump himself. This documentary will completely give you a new view of elections going back through Nixon. So he's a weird character. He's spooky. He bleaches his hair white. White. And he always wears white suits and weird top hats and glasses. And he is very stony-faced and strange. So he was on a panel with James Carville, and they had a great back and forth. James Carville essentially got Bill Clinton elected, and he was asked, what similarities does he see between Clinton's impeachment, Nixon's impeachment, and the possible impeachment of dear old Donald? This is what he does. He asked the whole audience. He said, raise your hand if any of you have broken into a building to steal information. And nobody raised their hand. And then he said, now raise your hand if anyone has sought out another country to collude with them to cheat in and win a campaign. Nobody raises their hands. How many of you have ever had sex? Everyone raises their hands. There's no comparison. There were plenty of heated moments in the crowd, for sure. But people were mostly behaved. There were some Trump fans, though, in their red hats that were hecklers, and they were obnoxious. They wouldn't even let their own right-wing people talk. They just kept yelling things like, CNN's terrorist, fake news, and USA. It was obnoxious. By Sunday, they had finally started throwing them out. All in all, it was amazing. I got lots of free swag, learned a lot, and I recommend it to anyone. Totally worth it. Okay, moving on.
Shocking.
I don't think I could sit down right now.
You mean...
Historic, astounding, shocking.
It's gonna inject a shock to the system.
We have been going through the various shocks that we'll be faced with in this country. And any and all are possible, but unquestionably, at least one of them is inevitable. And when it happens, when the next 9/11 occurs, the next Katrina, Iraq War, Ebola, or financial crash shakes the foundations of this country, our president... His people and the Republican Party will take advantage of our shock, our pain and distraction to tell us to stay home, to go shopping. They'll ban protesting and ban immigration, ban an entire race or religion even more than they already have. They will move funds from public services to big business. They will fulfill their most extreme ideas on their checklist because they can while snuffing out opposition and gathering more power for the ruling party and the administration. And most importantly, the president. We ain't seen nothing yet. In previous episodes, using Naomi Klein's work on what she calls the shock doctrine, we established the likelihood and the fallout that would occur in the case of a terror attack, should we go to war, and the week before last, we did a financial crash assessment. That brings us to the likelihood of a weather shock. The GOP is ramping up gas and oil production like we haven't seen in some time. They are stripping the regulatory power of every agency possible, upping the possibility of a major industrial accident.
And now we turn to that oil rig that sank after it exploded in the Gulf of Mexico, the Coast Guard.
And then, of course, there are the hurricanes and the earthquakes in the face of poor infrastructure that are likely not to be addressed before such an event occurs.
Buildings have collapsed. There are reports from New Orleans of people trapped in buildings that have come down around them.
Klein does point out that there's a lag time of about a decade between the release of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and the full resulting warming. So the very worst climate effects of this administration's policies won't likely be felt until they are out of office. That said...
We are hurtling toward the day when climate change could be irreversible.
Rising sea levels already altering this nation's coast.
China's capital is choking in its worst pollution of the year.
5% of species will become extinct.
Sea levels rising, glaciers melting.
We've already locked in so much warming that no president can complete a term without facing major weather-related disasters.
Firefighters tonight are attacking explosive wildfires that are tearing through Kansas, Oklahoma,
Texas, and Colorado.
We were
just 2 months into the long dark night that is the Donald's reign before he was confronted with overwhelming wildfires in the Great Plains, which led to so many cattle deaths that one rancher described the event as their own Hurricane Katrina. Donald didn't spare a tweet, but... You can be sure when the disaster hits the coast, where there's money to be made and building up the shores, he will be all over that disaster. Pence, too. Maybe especially. Look up the role Pence played in the Katrina recovery if you want to see the corruption playbook for which he orchestrated the execution of the quote-unquote recovery of Katrina. It's insidious. Guys, we still have to question if Trump out of office is better. I mean, Pence is terrifying. Anyways, Klein predicts, and history does seem to prove her point, disaster response services marketed specifically towards the only people that Donald believes matter, the wealthy, will be the biggest Trump-era escalation. For instance, there was a short-lived airline called HelpJet. Based in the spray tan's unfortunate side effects, Donald's beloved West Palm Beach. HelpJet disturbingly offered an array of gold-plated rescue services in exchange for a membership fee. When a hurricane was on its way, HelpJet dispatched limousines to pick up members, booked them into five-star golf resorts and spas, some were safe, then whisked them away on private jets. No standing in lines, no hassles with crowds, just first-class experience that turns a problem into a vacation. Enjoy the feeling of avoiding the usual hurricane evacuation nightmare. Bye-bye. HelpJet didn't survive. Unfortunately, HelpJet did not misjudge the market for such services. It came out in around 2006. It was simply ahead of its time. These days, in Silicon Valley and on Wall Street, the more serious high-end survivalists are hedging against climate disruption and social collapse by buying space in custom-built underground bunkers in Kansas, protected by heavily armed mercenaries, and building escape homes on high ground in New Zealand. It goes without saying that you'll need your own private jet to get there. Besides the weirdness of such services, what is worrying about the entire top-of-the-line survivalist phenomenon is that as the wealthy create their own luxury escape hatches, there is diminishing incentive to maintain any kind of disaster response infrastructure that exists to help everyone, regardless of income. Precisely the dynamic that led to enormous and unnecessary suffering in New Orleans during Katrina. This two-tiered disaster infrastructure is growing alarmingly fast. In fire-prone states such as California and Colorado, insurance companies provide a concierge service to their exclusive clients. When wildfires threaten their mansions, the companies dispatch teams of private firefighters to coat them in retardant. The public sphere, meanwhile, is left to further decay. And California! Liberal, progressive California provides a glimpse of where this is all headed. For its firefighting, the state relies on upwards of 4,500 prison inmates who are paid $1 an hour when they are on the fire line, putting their lives at risk battling wildfires, and about $2 a day when they're back at camp. By some estimates, California is saving $1 billion a year through this program. This is the picture of what happens when you mix austerity politics with mass incarceration and climate change. Next episode, we'll go over the steps again that help protect us from the worst of Hurricane Donald. So, I had this long and truly excellent, I promise, rant about our worthless president encouraging cops to ramp up police brutality. And then some of the cops in the audience not only cheered, but laughed at those statements. Laughed! What kind of license are these cops going to take now? Now that they have been given permission and encouragement from our dick weasel president. But I don't think I need to, because I imagine everyone who listens to my show already understands all that. I will say this, however. The response I got from several friends after posting about this bummed me out. The response was to the effect of, or exactly, are you surprised? To which I have this to say. Of course, I am profoundly aware that Donald is willing and capable to do practically any horrible thing. Hell, maybe not even just probably everything. I can have that understanding and still be outraged. Everyone should be outraged by that speech. By the cops, by the whole scene, by the state of our country, by it all. It is imperative that we never allow this government to beat us down to the point where our cynicism smothers our anger or our outrage. This is not normal, and as soon as it becomes normal, we, the resistance, and our country are lost forever. Yes, I was outraged. Yes, I was appalled, and as a lifetime cynic, I take pride in that. We should be outraged because it sanctions the abuse and eventual murder of people based on race. Dear God, let injustice trigger outrage and fear and sadness and more. Never, never let this president or anyone take that from us. It will maintain our moral compass and fuel our desire to help, to act, to strive for better. It proves that we still have some hope for better. And it does not mean that we lose our heads. We don't allow our emotions to overtake the argument, the action, the process. Outrage and clarity of thought must exist within the same space, which is totally possible. Not easy. I personally struggle with it. I usually need some time and space before I can be sure I am acting with intention rather than reacting with emotion. We can turn these 4 years around to something better, no question. But we cannot do it if we cease to allow ourselves to care. So care. Give yourself permission to feel again. All right, guys, I gotta run. Before I do, though, I have a request. If you could, it would really help me out if you could like my Facebook page. I have lots of listeners, but I'm struggling to grow the page. Social media is not my strong suit. If you could do that, it would help me so I can drive more traffic and continue to grow the show. I would really appreciate it. Okay, thank you for listening. You can find my show on crabdiving.com. That is one word, C-R-A-B-D-I-V-I-N-G, under the K-Voice tab. Or you can download it as a podcast. You can also find my show on Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice. And of course, on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. Okay, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
Grab him by the pussy.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Pussy.
He is embarrassing. He is shameful. He is disgusting. You crazy lunatic 70-year-old man, baby. Stop it. You are now the president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, and you need to stop acting like a mean girl.
He's always been a loser.
Find a hobby.
You are president, jackass.